Welcome to another episode of Mazel Tov Cocktail, a Jewish left podcast from the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, Melbourne. It's conversations with me, Max Kaiser, and interesting people in Australia and internationally. With us today, we have Myers Werling and Eva Orbuk, two young Jewish activists with the If Not Now Jewish activist group in the States. The immediate impetus for me wanting to talk to them was to discuss the recent trip of hundreds of diaspora Jews to the West Bank, where they participated in a coalition with Israelis and Palestinians to start rebuilding a Palestinian village in the South Hebron Hills in the West Bank, which had been dismantled between 1980 and 1998 by the violence of the Israeli army. I also wanted to talk to them about If Not Now, the very vibrant and energetic Jewish group committed to ending the American Jewish support for the occupation. As we discussed a couple of episodes ago, there are talks happening in Australia about starting a similar group, and I wanted to find out a little bit more about their organisation and sort of their successes and problems, and if they have any advice for us. So, without further ado, we'll start the interview. All right, Maya and Eva, thanks so much for joining us on Mazel Tov Cocktail. I'm really excited about this interview.
Thank you for having us.
So glad to be here. Thanks, Max.
Great. Thanks, guys. So just to kick us off, would you mind introducing yourselves?
I'll start. My name is Eva, and I live in the San Francisco Bay Area in the States. I am 28 years old and grew up here, and now work as a full-time community organizer, mostly with the Latino immigrant community here. And but I grew up in Jewish community like Maya, and have recently gotten quite involved in a movement called If Not Now to attempt to end our Jewish community's support in America for the occupation of Palestine.
Brilliant.
Hi, Max. Hi, everyone. My name is Maya. I live in Washington, D.C. in the U.S. right now. I'm originally from the same coast that that my dear Eva is from. I grew up in Oregon, and I also grew up in Jewish community. I like to joke that I really did not know non-Jews until about the age of 13, and really spent all my time in Jewish day school and summer camp and in that community. And then after, when I went to high school and college, I really started moving away from Jewish community, mostly around the occupation. Now I work at a lobby, an organization that tries to influence the U.S. Congress, and I work with another Quaker, or another religious organization, the Quakers, and I mostly work on peace issues. So I'm glad to be here.
Fantastic. So later in the interview, we're going to get into a discussion about the group that you're both involved in, If Not Now, and maybe hear a little bit about those other groups that you're also working with. But I wanted to talk to you guys because particularly about a recent action that you were involved in Israel-Palestine with the Center for Jewish Nonviolence, in particular the Sumud Freedom Camp in the West Bank. And there were hundreds of diaspora Jews there from the States and Europe, as well as a couple of Australian Jews there who are friends of Mazel Tov Cocktail and put me in contact with you. So tell us a bit about this project, where it came from, what was the idea behind it, who is involved, and what effect it's had or is going to have.
Yeah, we're so happy to be on this interview because this week marks the 50th anniversary of the occupation of East Jerusalem, West Bank, and Gaza since the 1967 war. And so it feels like a really, really just important time right now, especially to be raising these issues all over the world. So thank you so much to start off with. And yeah, so we recently got back from this incredible delegation trip with the Center for Jewish Nonviolence. And I had not been involved in that organization before the trip, but friends of mine from If Not Now had gone on that trip last year and just came back really powerfully connected to the issue. And so it connected, for me, I didn't even have to think twice about going because I felt like for me as a diaspora Jew, if I'm going to continue this work here so far away from the daily realities of the occupation, it's really puts a little fire in me to get over there and to see on the ground. There's nothing better than seeing and being able to participate in some solidarity work directly. So that's what I think the benefit of going, and I would just encourage all Jews around the world and non-Jews to go. But Maya, maybe you want to speak a little bit to CJNV.
Certainly. So CJNV is a few years old. It's a pretty new organization, and it creates opportunities for Jews around the world. As you mentioned, we had some Australian friends, some British friends, other European friends, and a lot of Americans who came together to join Palestinians working to actively end the occupation through nonviolence. And we really were able to both experience the occupation, to witness people just living their lives, and were welcomed into many people's community. And at the same time, we were able to take nonviolent action, to spend our time in Palestine being active actors against the occupation, to actively kind of to do our work, to what is that phrase, to be a cog in the wheel in terms of the occupation. And I think for me, one of the pieces of the Center for Jewish Nonviolence that appealed to me was that it's not just about acting against the occupation, but it's about creating something. It's about creating a future that honors the full, as they say, equality and shared humanity of Jews and Palestinians. And we were able to do that really by living through living it. You mentioned earlier the Samud Freedom Camp. Samud means steadfast. And this was a camp that was erected, connected to other freedom camps that we're seeing popping up across the U.S., the kind of most famous, the one that's most thought about in this moment is Standing Rock. And we were essentially building a community together of led by Palestinians with Israelis and internationals, many of whom were Jews, to come together and actually bring villagers from who grew up in Saruda, which is a village in the southern Hebron Hills, and to really bring them back to their community. We can talk a lot about the history. This family, Fadl, was the person that kind of led this effort in many ways. He had been kicked out about 20 years ago. It was a part of a system of displacement led by the Israeli military, also led by violent settlers in the region. One thing that we learned as we were getting settled in this area and beginning to build this camp is that just next door, kind of breathing on our necks, was one of the most violent and radical settlements in the West Bank, settlement Ma'on. And we could really feel what it, just a taste of what it must have been like to have these settlers come and look at what we are doing on a constant basis, to have a drone from the organization Regavim fly over and just watch, let their presence be known, and let us know that we were being watched. And So our existence there, the community that we were building, was one of this philosophy of existence is resistance. And we as American Jews, as international Jews, were there in order to use some of the privilege that we bring to the region in order to help bring this family back to this community.
Great. So, yeah, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about sort of the coalition that was part of this project, and maybe if there were, you know, sort of if there were issues involved in putting together that coalition and how people worked together, what sort of basis it built for future work. And also, yeah, as far as I know, the Sumud Freedom Camp is still going. Can you tell us a bit about all the internationals have gone home. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. So neither Maya or I were part of the original coalition, so I can't speak as deeply to it as I would like, but I will mention some of the organizations that did incredible work. I believe they started in the 8 months ago or something, Maya. And they did incredible organizing. This was not something that was put together at the last minute or just thrown together like, oh, Americans happen to be coming, let's do something. To me, this appeared extremely intentional. These groups that of my perception was mostly Israeli and Palestinian activists living both in Israel and Palestine started meeting together, as well as some international Jews who were living in Israel. There is a incredible new program where diaspora Jews can come live in Jerusalem for 5 months and train about doing anti-occupation activism. So some of those folks were involved in this. Another organization that was involved on the Palestinian side was Holy Land Trust. They're a wonderful group based out of Bethlehem. We made relationships with many of their staff. And another one was called Youth Against Settlements. And this is an organization we spent a lot of time with. Their founder, Isa Amro, is a pretty well-known Palestinian activist who travels around the world and has just really, really inspiring leader. When we were on the front lines kind of facing the IDF in our action, Isa was the one yelling out commands of what we should do. So that's the type of intensity that we were facing just for a little while. A couple other organizations. One is All That's Left. That's a coalition of many diaspora Jews and Israelis working on this issue. And of course, the Center for Jewish Nonviolence. And Combatants for Peace was an incredible one that many folks may have heard of. They are featured in a new documentary that's recently come out called, what is it called? Resisting. Do you know, Maya? I'll get that name. But there's a great documentary that I recommend about Combatants for Peace, which is basically this organization that takes people from both the Israeli and the Palestinian side who were formerly involved in, may have been formerly involved in violent activities, such as either being a soldier, being involved in violence against soldiers, or perhaps just coming from those different sides. And then these are folks who've renounced violence and are now fully embracing nonviolent activism together. So really incredible peace building. We just had the privilege of kind of jumping onto this coalition that was really done over the course of many months to strategize about what would be the smartest strategy and use, as Maya said, the privilege of international people coming and having maybe a lot more media attention than everyday Palestinian activism would have, unfortunately, because of the imbalance of power there. And so that's another thing we brought is sort of internationalized to this issue. And perhaps you can post some of the links later to things been written. But
Eva, I'd love to add one thing that made this coalition so incredible. And for me, one thing that showed that we were building something that was bigger than just that weekend or that week or or us returning the villagers back to Suruta in the long term, is that we were bringing, that this coalition that came together was bringing together many actors who, from my understanding, from what we were told, really haven't been able to work together in the past. And you mentioned, if not now, we're really focused on building this kind of bigger tent in the Jewish community. The goal of this was to kind of create a bigger tent of anti-occupation activism in Palestine that's also connected to Israelis, like those and all that's left, that's connected to this international coalition of people who are committed to continue coming. And so it's in that power and it's in that kind of collective building that a lot of the strength that we built over this weekend was founded, or over the time we spent there, that was founded.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I wonder if you can, talk a bit about, is it the sort of connection to an international Jewish movement which makes it easier for Israelis to act sort of in coalition with Palestinians? What are the sort of the relationships there?
That's a really interesting question. I'm not sure if how that affects the Israelis. I know for non-occupation activists in Israel, like average Israeli citizens, my impression is that outside participation on this issue can be quite threatening and often unwelcome. And I faced that there with some family members that I connected with who were, like, I think understandably to some extent, pretty defensive and, to say the least, curious about why I was there and what I was doing as someone who doesn't live there and doesn't understand the daily security concerns. But to speak to your question of, does international activism support Israeli activism? I would imagine so. Maya, what do you think?
I'm not sure if I can speak specifically to lifting up Israeli activism, but I will say that there is this burgeoning community based in All That's Left, a collective of mainly Jewish people who are committed to lifting up the diaspora kind of angle towards anti-occupation work. And for us to connect with them, as someone who spent a little bit of time in the region, not a considerable amount, it was really inspiring to see a lot of the community building and building that's happening right now. That for me was a major takeaway, that there's just a lot of building happening and that our strength really does come by bringing together these collective communities, by bringing together actors that would not necessarily be working together, and finding ways that we can build power by being in solidarity with one another.
Brilliant.
And I would like to speak to what you asked us about before, which was, is Samud camp still going? And I'm so happy to report that it is. It's something like day 23. This is really incredible. Like, I get chills when I say that, because we were told, you know, this might not last more than a couple hours. To be honest, and we were going in with that uncertainty, and that we were prepared to be interrupted and raided by both settlers or IDF right away, essentially. And the thing is, like, it really has lived up to its name of Samud, meaning steadfastness. I mean, they have been raided, at least three times. One when we were there, and several since we've left and gone back to our safe homes. And every single time, the folks in the camp continue to rebuild and pick it back up the next day.
That's great. That's really brilliant to hear. So now I kind of wanted to move the discussion a little bit towards, if not now, the group that you're both involved in the States. Now that's it's quite a recent group. Tell us a bit about where it came from, sort of what its major activities have been, and also maybe sort of what successes you've had as well.
Well, I was glad to listen to the last podcast that you recorded and hear some murmurings of, if not now, that it's spreading to Australia, and definitely something that we shared a lot about as we talked to European Jews as well. If Not Now is a movement of American Jews in that are committed to ending the American Jewish support for the occupation. We were founded in 2014 out of this deep sadness and mourning coming out of many of our friends in the Jewish community who were seeing the horrific violence that was happening in Gaza in Israel, and wanted to come to the streets to publicly mourn, but not to disconnect the pieces of us that are Jews, but to really actually sit in that nuance and to say that Jews really oppose the occupation. And so after 2014, after the Gaza war ended, a few of us came together and we built this structure for a movement. And then we launched again a year later, and we have grown to over 1,000 people trained in our community, to, you know, over 1 million people watching our videos across the country and across the world, to thousands and thousands of people taking to the streets, and not just taking to the streets, but taking to our Jewish communities and the institutions that claim to represent us, and saying we as American Jews cannot turn a blind eye as we see the occupation continue, and that actually we have a really important role to say enough, to say if not now, when.
Brilliant. Eva, did you have stuff to add?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, this is a topic that I am myself learning about all the time, because I grew up in some Jewish community, but not quite to the extent that Maya described, and I wasn't fully aware until recently how the extent of like the mainstream Jewish community's support for the occupation. And it's kind of like a awakening process that's a little bit horrifying, sadly, to find out how entrenched a lot of our politics in the United States are in Israel, specifically upholding the occupation, and how that is supported by the Jewish institutions. Not necessarily, I think if you ask a mainstream, like an average American Jew, like what their politics are, we lean left. But when it comes to Israel, especially older generations are very tied up in really defending Israel at all costs. And for us, that's a problem. We feel, and if not now, as Maya was saying, we're a big tent. So there are people with many different viewpoints. But what we feel is that we can't just support Israel at all costs. There needs to be, we can both love it and support it and also have actual standards for human rights. And so one of the examples of the way I've learned about that our community is supporting the occupation is the organization AIPAC, which is, you probably know about it, but a serious lobbying group in the United States, one of the most serious, powerful ones that basically makes their way to contact with most politicians and serves to further the sending of millions, billions of dollars to Israel, which many of which are going, we are sure, to upholding occupation. And so one of, if not now, strategies this year has been to target AIPAC and to build this public movement around that them as a target. They're only one of the many targets we have, also the Trump administration.
Yeah, great. Well, I want to talk in a second about the Trump administration and sort of the links that, if not now, are building between challenging Trump and racism in the US and challenging the Israeli occupation. But before we get to that, I wanted to... There was a really remarkable line in one of the articles that you sent me, Maya, by one of the If Not Now leaders, which I'll post a link to in the show notes, by Emily Maya. And the line is, until we win over the majority of our community to see ending the occupation as within our own self-interest as American Jews, we will not only continue to be divided from those whose solidarity we need in this moment, but we will also forfeit the idea that Jewish tradition and Jewish history obligate any particular commitment to justice. Now, there's a few big ideas in that one small statement, but I was hoping that you could sort of unpack some of that philosophy and those ideas in there, particularly sort of seeing the idea of the movement as not just being, some sort of purely altruistic solidarity movement, but also kind of revisioning and changing the ideas of, what's good for American Jews or what's good for the Jewish community, and how that connects to Jewish tradition and Jewish history and that particular commitment to justice. So I was hoping you guys could talk to that.
That is a fascinating topic, I think, that both Maya and I love. The topic of our own liberation. And it's something that is kind of hard to talk about and is kind of new territory because, like you said, we're maybe as activists most familiar with joining in other people's movements. And a lot of people have come to If Not Now, both older and younger folks, saying, this is the first time I've ever felt part of a movement for my own people's liberation. And many Jews around the world, certainly not all, but many in America are considered white at this point and have access to a great deal of privilege. So it gets hard for us to, for many of us, certainly not Jews of color necessarily, but I'll speak for myself as an Ashkenazi Jew who always passes as white, to forget that we have our own struggles. And so what we mean by that is it feels like we're in a crisis in a certain way, that our community supporting this is really, really damaging to the Jewish soul, if you want to use spiritual language. I'll let Maya speak a little more to how this might tie into our own liberation.
Well, growing up in Jewish day school, I was learning about the Holocaust in preschool. That was something that was embedded in all of the conversations that we were having, that we were learning about, especially in relationship to Israel, especially in relationship to what our own identity as Jews meant. And actually, I think this concept of fighting and defending ourselves, that's as Jews, that's something that I learned about when I was younger. At the same time, getting a little later, as I was learning about incredible movements in the U.S., like the labor movement, like the civil rights movement, one thing that I was often told and that I actually that made me really proud to be Jewish was that Jews were important solidarity actors in these communities or in these movements and in the labor movement, that they were actually a really core piece of what that looked like. And so for me, being Jewish, you often hear Jews talking about tikkun olam, giving back to the world, but it went farther than that. Being someone who acts for justice was at the core of what it meant to be Jewish. And so when I got to a certain age, when I got to 13 and 14, and I was learning more and more about the occupation, it was something that my parents talked to me a lot about. They often tell me the story of when my Jewish day school decided to, they were thinking about potentially going back to Israel after the Second Intifada as a part of our day school trip. And my father said, if you send them there, my kid's not going to go because I don't want my money going towards the occupation. So I was learning a lot at home about that. And I'm so privileged to really walk in the footsteps of my parents who've been such leaders for me around this issue. But at the same time, at my Jewish day school, we saw maps of Israel that failed to show borders. We were taught major narratives about Israeli security. We were often taught that it's too complex to think about, to talk about. And it really ripped me apart in some ways. I felt like everything I was learning about justice, about standing in solidarity, and about fighting for not just peace, but really for others in the same way I fight for myself, it was always challenged at this place related to Israel and Palestine. So when we look at the occupation, when we look at the conflict, what's happening in the U.S. is the context I can speak to, is that our communities are so scared of, they're so traumatized from our past. They're so traumatized from the real trauma that my family went through, that many of our families went through in terms of the Holocaust, that they're unable to see that we are kind of rotting the core of the Jewish community when we fail to stand up and stand in solidarity with those that with communities that we have historically stood in solidarity with.
Great. So yeah, I suppose that leads into my next question, which is particularly how, if not now, have dealt with issues in the US context. And I know you've been very vocal around opposing the Trump administration. But yeah, tell us a bit about the connections that you've made between sort of challenging Trump and racism in the US and challenging Israeli occupation. What's been happening there?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that our work around focusing on domestic issues has continued to focus on the institutions that are representing us. So when we have, you know, every one of us was shocked on November 8th. Every one of us not only was shocked, but kind of ripped to the core in terms of what this meant for the world that we want to see and what this meant for the country that we were building. But after November 8th, when I was looking towards the institutions that I felt represented me, there was a huge gap. There was a major gap in terms of the way that American Jewish institutions were standing up when we were seeing the rise of authoritarianism. And so we have taken action to communicate to our institutions and to the world that Jews do stand against authoritarianism. Jews do stand against threats around Muslim bans. Jews do stand against threats to the communities that we see ourselves in solidarity with. And that's led us to the doors of many of the institutions that represent us. The other piece that we're seeing, though, is that oftentimes American Jews are the conversation that people like to talk about. We're at the center of political conversations, but often we're kind of left out, or a few token people are brought in. And we saw this a lot around Steve Bannon, a known anti-Semite, a known Islamophobe. I remember seeing a few radio interviews where you know, a few token Jews, we get up and say, he's not anti-Semitic. So, you know, I'm saying that. So how is it possible? But, you know, evidence tells otherwise. And so for us, is if not now, we're thinking, our thinking is that the roots around racism in are kind of, they're from the same roots. They're based out of fear that if we are too loud in this moment, that we could put ourselves in danger. And so our community, our If Not Now community, was standing up and really saying, you know, we're actually fighting for a vision that is brave, that holds our values to its core, and that says our liberation is inextricably connected to the liberation of others. And that means Muslim folks, that means undocumented folks, that means Black folks in this country, and that also means, that means queer folks in this country, that means anyone who is at risk under the policies that we're seeing pushed by this administration.
Yeah, and of course it means, in addition to all of that, at home, then solidarity with Palestinians. And that's just an area where I feel like our community really has to grow. And Israel too, to be honest, from what I saw over there, the occupation, one of the sad consequences of it is it sets up a system where people just don't know each other across lines of difference. So if it feels hard for a diaspora Jew to make a relationship with a Palestinian, then, I mean, it's also extremely hard for an Israeli, from what I could tell, because of that system. I'm sorry. And in addition, just to add on to what Maya was saying about our liberation, we feel like, If Not Now talks a lot about this idea of Jews cozying up to power. You know, for example, AIPAC having a solid relationship with the Trump administration, many may feel like it makes us sort of blend in and protected by those in power. But us young Jews in this movement are recognizing that it does not make us safer.
I wanted to ask you guys about I guess, your strategy and how you position yourselves within the Jewish community. And I know a particular sort of conversation that's come up in Australia and probably in other places as well, looking at the US, is looking at the differences between If Not Now and another sort of major left-wing Jewish organization called Jewish Voice for Peace. And I was hoping that you could tell us a bit about maybe how you guys differ from them, either sort of politically, strategically, tactically, all of those things.
Well, the first thing I'll say is that, you know, If Not Now is a fairly new movement. We're only just, you know, a couple of years old. And at the same time, organizations like Jewish Voice for Peace, J Street, Americans for Peace Now, Peace Now before it, Jews Against the Occupation before it, and, you know, we could keep going back. These organizations of American Jews have really historically been present in our community. And we are taking up the helm, recognizing that the landscape of Jewish organizations against the occupation has really been, it's been divided around issues related to statehood, around issues related to BDS or not BDS, around issues related to specifically Palestinian solidarity, and what that looks like effectively in practice. And so what If Not Now is trying to do is we're trying to build a big tent organization that allows people who are Zionists and anti-Zionists, who are, you know, who have perspective across the spectrum, to come together under this collective understanding that the occupation, it's not just immoral, it's a crisis right now on the ground, that people are dying every day, that people's lives are being controlled, manipulated, determined by the will of the IDF and the state, and that we can come together to recognize that occupation is wrong, that 50 years is far too long, and that we need to move forward in a different way.
Eva, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think that Maya pretty much said it excellently, that there are differences when you get down to it. Before I was involved in this movement, I just looked at all of these groups as, I just lumped them all together, thought it was just, Jews being brave enough to take a stand on this topic that was more or less not to be talked about in our community. But when I joined and got more involved, I did see that there are subtle differences, just like in every movement. Like Maya said, particularly around our approach to how much solidarity with Palestinians is going to be at the forefront, which is, I believe, is incredibly important. And we just engaged in that in our trip to the West Bank. But our strategy, and if not now, is a lot more focused on building power and building like this large movement, popular movement through all the actions we take, through relationship building in our own community, eventually, which will get large enough to convince our institutions like that they're going to really miss out on the young Jews becoming members and furthering these institutions if they don't pick a side.
I wanted to ask you guys sort of a question about basically advice that you could give us here in Australia. Like we talked about towards the start of the interview, that there's you referenced the interview with Yehuda and Ali, the Jewish leftists in Sydney, and there's sort of conversations happening right now in Melbourne and Sydney about beginning some sort of new sort of Jewish left activist grouping or network or organization, and we're definitely looking at If Not Now as sort of a possible model. What sort of advice would you guys have for people starting out?
I think the first piece of advice, first I'd say this is quite exciting. Do it. Make it happen. That's awesome. I think the first piece of advice that I would say is, it sounds like you guys are already taking action. You're already figuring out who you are and what you stand for and how you are united together as a community. But don't skip the steps of thinking, what are we trying to change and what is our purpose here? I was a part of the process of If Not Now kind of putting itself on pause and developing the strategy, story, and structure of our community. And that was an incredible process for us in order to figure out, in order for us to be able to be a big tent organization, for us to figure out the things that we do want to take a stand on, the things that we do want to name we support, and the things we do want to name who we are, and to allow us actually to create a structure that is both autonomous as a national organization, big country, lots of states, and a Jewish community spread, from Washington, D.C. to California. So it allows us to kind of act both autonomy as our local communities and also through unity as a national network. That process for me was just both deeply inspiring. I would be remiss if I didn't name that we were highly supported by the Momentum Community in the United States, which is an organization that supports movements to be able to do essentially what we just did, to do some major planning. And I like to think of it as kind of incubation to figure out, who we are and what we stand for, and to to front load that process and that procedure. So really take the time to figure out those pieces. The other thing that I want to name is, you know, I know a small bit about the Australian Jewish community context, but you're obviously the experts there. And I would say trust that expertise of what you know about your own community. That for many of us in If Not Now, it was a thoughtful, slow process to figure out where actually does our community stand and what are the biggest things that are holding our community back from being publicly opposed to the occupation, which is in line with our values as our stated values as a community for justice and peace. And for us, it was beginning to understand how much fear around anti-Semitism, how much fear around annihilation were so alive in the modern existence of our community. I've mentioned a few times, you know, I was taught about those things at every piece of my education in the Jewish community. And that fear wasn't fake. You know, that fear was real and alive. And as someone, my grandmother was a war survivor in World War II. She's not Jewish, but I saw how fear and trauma followed her through her entire life. And, you know, that fear and trauma in some ways has been written in the DNA of our people. And for us to ignore that and to not name that that is alive and that that is driving a lot of the motivations of who we are, I think is really, it's missing the point. And it's not going to lead us to a place of collective liberation. It's not going to lead us of a place where we can both heal from the trauma of, you know, not just the last century, but, you know, there's a lot of different ways of being Jewish and a lot of different ways that Jews of color have been traumatized in the U.S. By all of the same racist systems that have traumatized Black people in this country or people of color generally. There's so many different ways that we've worked that into our DNA. And so we would really be missing the point if we forgot that.
That's really interesting. And I think, yeah, that's definitely something that people don't understand looking from the outside of the Jewish community is, how real those sorts of fears and traumas are. Particularly in Melbourne, the Holocaust looms very large over everything. But I guess I think it's really important to recognize that. I wanted to ask a little further is how do you go about sort of working with that fear or trauma or paranoia? How do you address that in terms of your overall goals of helping or pushing Jewish communities to be openly critical of Israel?
I think that this ties into my advice, which would be that when you're building a movement like this, we have to support our members to be able to go and have really hard conversations because you are asking people. I have been asked to, you know, face my own home community and take a really big risk, which is, I mean, for me, like, I come from a slightly a more progressive area, so it's not as big of a risk as other friends that I've talked to who feel like they're the only one saying something about this. But still, I feel like every time I bring this up, I am facing all of those heavy heavy feelings and traumas that Maya was talking about. And so I think that you have to give people the skills to have some of those conversations and use the discernment of like when it is worth it to engage with someone and when is it not, because we're not going to win every person. And one of the things that I love about If Not Now's strategy is it helps us understand what we call the spectrum of allies and how if you're being strategic and organized, there's a certain segment of people in your community you do want to focus on who are people who are maybe supporting you but being very passive about it, not doing much, and you can get them to be more active supporters. or they're sort of neutral, and you can bring them to be a little passive or active. We don't generally go too far into the opponent's area, and Maya, you might want to talk more about this, but we are, so that's a little bit about protecting ourselves, I think, and from, you know, like spending energy in a strategic way. I probably won't be convincing APAC to stand up against the occupation, but I can have an effect on my father, who, just as an anecdote, I've seen him be transformed by this whole journey that I've been on. He was pretty silent on this issue for years and told me that it's not really our place. And since I've been engaged in IFNOT Now, and particularly since I went on the Center for Jewish Nonviolence trip, he's like had this renaissance of reading about it and actually trying to convince others in our family. So I do think it is about taking risks, having those hard conversations, but also kind of using discernment on when not to go there.
I think I'll add that if not now, we believe that the majority of American Jews, when confronted with both the realities of the occupation and this kind of concept that Emily Mayer brings up in the article you referenced, that our own liberation is not going to happen. We're not going to be fully free. We're going to be tied to the security interests, to the fear that our community is so stuck in until the occupation ends. We really do believe that if that question is brought forward to our community, that the majority of American Jews not only will recognize that they not only will say, you know, we need to end the occupation, we support ending the occupation, but that many of them will come out in the streets and take action. I think all of us have participated in dialogues around Israel-Palestine with people from in so many different spaces, and relationship building and community building in the institutions that we are a part of and that represent us as Jews is incredibly important. And we also know that those institutions, if they fail to represent us, that we need to speak out. So American Jews know that they're and the world knows where we stand. So you know, we'll talk, of course, to whoever. But what we're really focused on is activating our community that has either been systematically kept in the dark when it comes to the occupation, or and the community that is too scared to take action because they're afraid, because they don't feel like it's their place, because they're not sure how to make of the conflict. And to really make it clear that this is simple, that the occupation needs to end, that American Jews cannot stand on that side. So our message is pretty clear, and it's about activating the incredible American Jewish community towards the values that are at the core of who we are.
And there's a term I recently learned that I love called PEPS, or Progressive Except for Palestine. And I would say that was me. And I know many people like that in the Jewish community who, or in other communities who, like, you'll see them out there, they're activists, they're taking action on so many issues, but they won't talk about this one. And I felt like that was me for a while, and I think that is a really good segment of people to target, because you can hold a mirror up to someone and say, hey, you are involved in so many social justice causes, and as a Jew, what about this one? the untouchable one. And in fact, if you reframe it, you getting involved in it is, it's a key to liberation, as we spoke about.
That's brilliant. Well, I think we're almost at the end of this interview. It's been a really interesting conversation. I just, before I let you guys both go, I wanted to just quickly ask, what projects are coming up for you, either with If Not Now or with the other groups that you're involved in. What's in the immediate future?
Well, as you may have seen in the news, If Not Now is it is 50 years of military occupation of the West Bank, Golan Heights, of Gaza, of so many pieces of Palestine, and we are busy marking this moment. I was a part of a protest last Sunday in front of the. This was the day before the 50th anniversary of the occupation, and the Friends of the IDF, which is of the Israeli Defense Forces, which is an organization that gives a lot of money to the IDF, was having a gala to raise money and to, you know, mark the 67 war and to really mark this moment. And we came to this event and stood outside and said, we know that this, the 1967 emotes different things for our community, that many people see that war and Israel's ability to not fall into the sea as a miracle. And at the same time, it resulted in mass displacement of Palestinians, even more so that had already occurred. And it really, it moved us into 50 years of occupation and also into moral, which has been devastating for Palestinians on so many levels, and into a moral crisis for the Jewish community, for the state of Israel, that's illegally occupied a people for 50 years. So we went outside that protest, and I talked about as standing in Samud Freedom Camp with the Center for Jewish Nonviolence, and standing in front of an Israeli soldier who could not have been much older than 18, and looking into his eyes and seeing how terrified he was as his as high up commanders in the West Bank tore down the tents that we had and the community that we had spent erecting over the last few over the few days prior. And I saw that at the same time he was shocked that we as American Jews were standing there and talking about our love for our people, singing Jewish songs, and also saying we oppose this occupation. And looking into his eyes and seeing so many pieces of that fear and so many of our realities clashing together, it to me was so essential to bring to the doorstep of the Friends of the IDF. Because this organization is one that supports bringing our American children to fight in the IDF and to be a part of lifting up the occupation. And that means that we are just as complicit as anyone else. My family members my friends have done that. And so for us to stand outside and say, don't lie to our kids anymore. Let them know what they're getting into. Let them know what they're a part of, and don't make 50 more years of an occupation that is dehumanizing and destroying Palestinian lives, and at the same time is just it's getting to the core of the fear that is so central to our community. And it's really it's putting us in a moral conundrum that we're at the center of. So that was one of the projects that we've been working on recently.
That's awesome, Maya. I was on the other side of the country, also doing an action on that same evening, as part of our kickoff for this month-long 50 years campaign. And we here in the Bay Area did a little bit of undercover action where we showed up to a Christians United for Israel event. If you haven't heard about them, check them out. Pretty creepy and interesting. They were having a Jerusalem Jubilee to celebrate the quote, unification of Jerusalem, i.e. the start of the occupation of East Jerusalem. And it was just a really fascinating experience to be in this room of people who, you know, many of whom seem very kind and well-intentioned, but when you look into, when you research what actually their focus and money and organizations going to, it is this, it felt like this twisted form of Jewish fetishization, but masking actual anti-Semitism and support for the occupation and a total disregard for the existence of Palestinians, really. So that was an action that we did. We ended up interrupting the event, protesting it, and getting kicked out. So I think little things like that, you know, one single action like that isn't going to change the entire situation. But what we're trying to do is sustain a long-term movement and empower ordinary folks like ourselves and to become leaders in this movement and to really take creative action together.
And that these actions occurred across the country, and they're occurring throughout this week. And we're going to see hundreds of Jews come to the streets and come to our institutions that claim to represent us, or institutions that are marking 50 years of occupation, citing, you know, Israeli security, and we're going to say enough, that we cannot exist in this way anymore, and that we as American Jews need to not be silent and need to voice our opposition to the occupation. That you can't do this in our name anymore.
Brilliant. All right. Well, thanks so much for talking to us on Mazel Tov Cocktail today, Maya and Eva. Yeah. And we'll definitely stay in touch with you guys as we continue to have our conversations in Australia. And I think that people will be listening to this interview and taking a lot from it. And I know I certainly have. So
yeah, we're so excited to hear about the movement that you guys build over there. We want to be in contact and support you all. It sounds amazing. And I just want to give a last minute plug for folks who want to learn more about what we did on the ground in Palestine and what's still continuing. You can go to bit.ly/donatesumud, S-U-M-U-D, capital D, capital S. And on that, they're still fundraising to just keep this reading camp going. So thank you all so much.
Thank Brilliant. You. So
well, I'll definitely put the links up. Okay, thanks again. Thanks very much again to Maya and Eva for that interview. Quick shout out for today is, yes, you guessed it, a Jeremy Corbyn related article. I'm still buzzing with Corbyn mania since the election, and one of the better and more in-depth pieces I recommend reading is a piece from the editors of Salvage magazine, a great relatively new publication from the UK. It's well known for advocating salvage Marxism and for what they call a hard-fought for pessimism, reflecting a perspective that, as they put it, hope is precious and it must be rationed. But in this editorial, without completely jettisoning their political perspective, they make clear the extent to which the Labour Party's success in the elections means a potentially radical change in political consciousness and a hugely enlarged sense of political possibility. Anyway, that article will be linked in the show notes, as well as pieces relevant to our discussion today. So thanks very much for listening. Music in this episode came from the Eastern Watershed Klezmer Quartet.